Hey, how's it going?
Yo, how's the winter treating you?
Well, it's been okay. It's almost done, I think.
Tried fishing out the back your back door yet?
Not yet, but I seen some little girl fishing today in about 10 mile per hour current and throwing a little like Rapala like floater or something. Probably never even made it to the mains below the water.
So that's the one, you live right behind where Biffle was, or who was up there?
Near
there.
The Biffle one was on, he ran up the Fox River.
Okay.
Right below the, in the pier by Green Bay.
I'm actually going to the pier on Friday.
To fish?
Yeah, you want to come down?
Yeah, probably. Are you going to be in a boat, or?
Yeah, Jason and John and a bunch of them are going, and, we're going just walleye fishing.
Yeah.
I think we're going from like 8 p.m. to like 3 in the morning or something, he said. Okay. He said that's when they were catching them pretty good, so.
Yeah, I mean, is there a boat space for me? Or how
I think, I mean, I don't really know. I don't really know much, but.
I'll think about it.
So we got the R&Ts coming up. yeah. I don't know if nobody knows, like, I'm sure there's many clubs that exist that are like them.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a club per se, that they're all opens, I mean.
Yeah, but I mean.
It'd be more fun if it was a club, so you could fish for points, or, you know, like a points race, but.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not too worried about them listening in on this, because I don't think, if they don't know what flipping is, I don't know if they know what.
they don't know what the internet is, either.
Yeah, I try to explain. It's hard to explain to people like what Ron and them guys are like every single tournament.
Yeah. Come. Well, I mean, they you gotta hand it to them. They
find really good.
Fish. They find fish with. It's impressive for what you know. After a quick look at them, you wouldn't expect them to catch fish.
I know.
These guys have you know six spinning rods on the deck. To start out, you know, most of them are like Gander Mountain series spinning rod, which I mean they're fine. It's not no disrespect to them, but it's just I don't know. You know, mostly I think they all fish with mono too.
Yeah,
spinning rods, and you know you got one frog tied on, four Senko rods, and maybe.
My favorite
spinner
is
bait or something.
Yeah, whenever we pull up on them, and one comes off, like it snaps his line, and he goes, "Well, nothing you can do about that."
Yeah, nothing you can do about that when he's throwing a Senko on 8 pound mono over, you know, milfoil
into the trees.
Yeah, into the trees, into the brush.
Oh my god! Yeah, my favorite is Travis's joke. What have we been fishing this for 3 years? We come up every single time. It's well, yep. My wife said, I don't even remember what it is.
Yeah,
I always mess it up.
It's more like he's been saying that for like 5 years. I think.
Yeah,
I think it's every morning. You know, it's usually cold in the mornings too. And for what? First of all, so Ron this. The tournament director, it's in the 40s sometimes, and he has his cut-off shirt just to look tough, I guess. And Travis, the other tournament director guy, he always says his joke, the wife told me to give her 12 inches and make it hurt, so I fucked her twice and hit her over the head with a brick.
If that doesn't sum up the R&T tournaments with like little rednecky club tournaments, I don't know what else does.
Yeah.
We fish against like all of the genealogy of the of Ron. Like all the different people. We always joke around about how he's just banging all these girls in up north Wisconsin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're half of the people we fish, but they're all related, I think, so. But, I mean, I don't know. It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah. No, I don't. I was talking about that yesterday. It's like I have way more fun almost just fishing those little tournaments. That's like you still get pissed off when you don't win or whatever, but it's still fun to just sit around and talk with all the people afterwards. Oh,
yeah. It's also hilarious how many supposed 9-pounders have been caught on the lakes by us. These guys, I don't know. Some, one minute you think they're legit anglers. They just won this tournament and somehow caught like 18 pounds on Shoot Pond or something. And then they tell you stories about how there's been 5 confirmed 9-pounders out of this lake, where a 5-pounder is a huge fish. And I mean, funny thing is, the biggest fish ever weighed in that circuit maybe what 5.25, 5.5.
Well, yeah, I don't know. There's always a big one caught, but there's never been one over 6, I don't think.
No.
Yet there's some guy has 5 9-pounders mounted on his wall, apparently. Yeah. The Dean Rojas bag.
Yeah, 45 pounds. Yeah, and somebody always loses a 6, of course.
Every tournament.
But it's never has one been weighed in.
My favorite one was when we fished the one little lake, Kelly Lake, and this guy was just like, I forget what the dimensions were, but he was like, yep, yesterday out, or Wednesday out in practice, I go and I caught one, measured her out, 26 and a half inches, 5.25 pounds.
Yeah, he's telling us, this lake is, you know, notorious for, like, every fish is 13 inches. I mean, there is a few giants in there, but by giants, I mean 5-pounders. But most of the fish are, you'll be fishing all day and catch 100 fish and maybe get 5 or 14 inches a lot of days. And this guy, yeah, before the tournament, he was docked right next to us, and he's telling us about this 5.25 pounder, 5.5 pounder he caught in practice. And I was like, wow, I never even seen a fish over 3 pounds on this lake, because that was the first tournament I fished there. And I was like, well, how long was it? Because I've never even seen a fish that big at all. He's like, oh, it was, yeah, I can't remember exactly what he said. Either just a 26 or 27 inches. And I was like, wow, that must have been one skinny fish.
Oh, my God, yeah, it must have been spawned out. Otherwise, it would have been one of those 9s that are swimming around up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, yeah, so I talked with Jason yesterday about co-angling and stuff, and I was thinking about Logan and how much fun he's having this in the first tournament.
Yeah, well, actually, he's doing it as a pro, so...
Right. But, I mean, I got on the topic just because you guys fished the Rayovac or the Everstarts whatever last year.
Yeah, co-angling can be awesome, but it all just depends on who you draw, really.
I don't know if you listened to it, but I got told him about what you told me about the guy on Pickwick that you drew the first day.
Oh yeah, I didn't get a chance to listen to it yet, but the guy on the one with the spinning rod.
Yep.
yeah, he pulled out this. Oh my God, he pulls out this like medium action carrot stick spinning rod with a big old Strike King 6XD on it. And I just quit at that point.
And you fished against the legend of Pickwick Lake too.
Yeah, Leon Tidwell, is that
Leon Tidwell, yeah.
The only reason I had even ever heard of him was because I watched an old, I think it was like 1999 or 98 Pickwick Bassmaster, like what was, it's now called the Elite Series, but back then it was like the top 150s or something. And I think, I don't know if anybody could actually join or how it exactly worked, how to get in it, but yeah, it was a bunch of, Bassmaster legit pros, and then this old redneck from Alabama.
Who still has the same boat from that tournament,
still has
the
same bullet bass boat. And, in that tournament, I was watching on YouTube, and he, from like 98 or whatever year it was, he's got like, I mean, Jason Quinn is like right up there for the win, and he's got this legit like school of giant largemouth he's crank, deep cranking, and Leon Tidwell sitting on the main current of Pickwick. And I don't know if you ever fished Pickwick, like, the current is fast. I mean, and he's throwing a spinning rod with a little bulb on it, And somehow he's getting, I don't even know how he got it down below the surface, and just pulling in 5 pounds, 6 pounds smallmouth.
With a big anchor just
anchored,
dragging.
Yeah, legit anchor. And his old bullet basketball sitting in the cart behind his two anchors. And so anyway, I didn't even know if this guy was still alive or anything. I mean, this was like 15 years ago, probably. And
he looked like he was about to die with his American flag hat. Yeah.
I don't know. I think it might have been Confederate flag.
Yeah, that's right. It was Confederate flag.
But so I hadn't thought anything about it. And then the first morning on Pickwick, my boater is driving around, and all of a sudden I see this beat-up old boat with a brand-new, like, Mercury racing engine on the back. And I was like, I thought, man, that might be that Tidwell guy I seen on YouTube. And sure enough, the guy who won the tournament as a co-angler got to fish with him one day, and he just had him up there. It was day two of the tournament, and Tidwell didn't do that great on day one, so he knew he had no chance to win. So he parks his boat on his best smallmouth spot somewhere in the middle of the river and lets his co-angler just whack on him all day. The guy ends up winning the tournament in like a $30,000 boat because this Tidwell guided him.
Yeah, I wonder if you can legitimately make a living just fishing one of those TFA lakes and just becoming an absolute stud on one lake, and every tournament that comes through there you end up entering, unless it's like the Elite Series.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what, like,
Mark Rose.
Mark Rose got all the TVA lakes that he just dominates. Oh. I mean, it's, you got to put in your out. Randy Haynes is another one who's just a stud out there. I don't know if he's, I have no idea if he's good anywhere else, but the ledge fishing, they just got it down somehow.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know if anybody that fishes down south or whatever does quite what we do during the winter, but we pretty much, and I'm not even close to the way you do it, but just sit there and watch old tournaments all day, especially since Bassmaster added all of them. That's the only way I can think of passing time. And then when you got just the way you said, yeah, Leon Tidwell, like, that just is just common knowledge, and nobody has even heard of him nor will ever hear of him since.
Yeah, he's not exactly a household name. But, yeah, before we went down to the Classic, I was watching like three old Classics a day until I got them all in. I'd just hook up my laptop to my TV screen and just watch them online, and then I ran out of those and started watching all the old Elite Series tournaments.
Well, I remember when we walked up to that, whatever that boat was, that red and white one at the Classic.
Oh, yeah, I was teaching the lessons on that one.
I know. We walk up, the guy's like, hey, you guys know what this is? And you're like, yeah, that's the one from the first Classic.
Yeah. The Rebel, I can't remember what the, it was, but it was made by Rebel.
Rebel, yeah.
That makes, like, the Rebel We Are crayfish, which is, like, the most underrated smallmouth bait ever. That's neither here nor there, but that's kind of my old secret that I forgot about until now. But, yeah, those Rebel boats, they're equipped with, like, the Lowrance flasher and, like, an anchor mate where you could push the button and drop the anchor off the front of the boat.
My favorite part of one of those old Classics is, I think it was, like, the 79, or it was, like, one of the first ones, and this guy was fishing on the bank, and all of a sudden he's like, oh, here they come, and he looks back, and there's a boat just going like 30 miles an hour. He's like, whoa!
Yeah, the intro for that one, I don't know if it was like 72 or 73, I think, but yeah, that was hilarious. He's just talking about how these crazy fast boats are just like ruining his fishing spot. They're just going at like
just putting by.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is that those first few tournaments, they line them all up in a horizontal line, and half of them were facing one way, half the other way, and then they just say go, and then everybody would take off. But they weren't even hard. They could hardly even get on plane because the boats were so heavy and the motors were. I think that Rebel boat had like an 80-horse motor or something. Maybe less, I can't remember, but they didn't go, I think it only went 30 miles an hour.
Oh my god, yeah, Those old ones, if anybody doesn't watch those old classics, you have to watch what the sport used to be. It's absolutely hilarious. Well, the one that was narrated from the Bass's perspective was just so ridiculously stupid.
Oh, that was awful. I couldn't... Honestly, that is the only classic I haven't watched the entire thing.
Because it's like 75, I think it was.
I think, yeah, it might have been the one.
Second or the third one. The one, 77, if it was 77, Klon won on, what, Gunnersville?
77, I don't know. But it was bad. Like, it was awful. I don't know how they could even allow it. It was terrible.
Well, it was just the infancy of tournament fishing, too, and it's just like they try to market it, and they're just awful at marketing. And then the best parts is watching them just basically drag the bass up the ramp on the big stringers, just throw them in the laundry basket.
Yeah, well, I don't think most people nowadays realize that, you know, the first classics, there was a 15-fish limit. And it wasn't, I think it was just the first one that wasn't catch and release. Like, it was just, you know, throw them on a string over the side of the boat. And they, like, for the 15-fish limit, you know, it's not even, you don't really need to catch big fish. It's a completely different strategy. You're just trying to catch a limit.
Right.
And because, you know, 15 fish isn't easy, especially back then with no, hardly any electronics or good equipment or anything.
Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, definitely you would be able to keep them if you wanted to, because I remember that's where the voice that we always use when we're tournament fishing, that we is a completely just nerdy, ridiculously stupid thing that you and I do. But Craig Schuff weighs in a fish and he goes, "Well, if that one goes over 10, I want it." And then the guy goes, 10 pounds, 8 ounces.
So yeah.
That's like our way to just announce while we're fishing and screwing around on the water. It's just...
Yeah, we kind of did do that, plus like add in some old school like sports commentary from like the 20s, and just I don't know, for some reason
I guarantee you nobody finds that funny. We are the only ones ever, because like, I remember we were
Tyler Galackner, it goes in a lunker. We just, I don't know,
I remember when we were fishing Pewaukee, and we were both skipping with Spros on docks, and we were not doing so hot. And I was just like, and we're skipping the Spro back into the creek, and I throw it, and there's another Spro comes next to me. I'm like, oh, shit, there's a guy standing right there. Like, he's probably listened to us just talk about this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's completely ridiculous.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so I don't know. What have you been, fishing lately at all with the, or is this basically done ice fishing?
No, this is like my least favorite time of year for fishing. It's just, I don't know, there's the water is so high right now. Just the ice just went out yesterday by my place.
Yeah.
On the river, and now it's, you know, raging.
Yeah.
So,
well, this is totally the worst, because you get 60 degree days now and you can't do anything. And, you know, I personally, I mean, you're the same way. I mean, obviously with your work, but when I'm done with work, I bring my boat to work so I can go right after. And, you know, anytime it's over 40 degrees, generally in the summer, I go out, and it just feels so bad when you actually go home and you're just like, what am I, I can't do anything.
Right. Yeah, everybody at work, you know, the normals who don't fish and just like the weather for being nice weather, they're all like, oh, it's so nice out, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, who cares, really?
I know.
Can't bass fish.
Well, the normals don't exactly know anything about. So I just die when we tell stories to each other about just, hey, you like the fish? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, I got a tournament this weekend. And then it's like generally a long pause, and it goes,
yeah.
You know, my grandpa and I go to Canada and catch a bunch of walleyes, and it's just like, okay, I don't. You don't understand what I'm talking about. You really don't. And today I picked up my boat from the shop, and the guy's like, I forget what we went on, and he goes, well, you don't need to charge your batteries every day. I don't know. I'm like, well, yeah, no, I probably fish like 4 to 5 times a week. And he goes, and he just laughed at me, and I was just like, no, I'm serious. He goes, wait, you actually go out 4 to 5 times a week? And I'm like, well, yeah, I would go 6 or 7, but I work sometimes till 5.
Yeah.
Your work is just even funnier, though, because you got all girls there.
Yeah, I got one today. This actually happened today. This lady, this older lady, came up to me, and she's really nice, but she goes, yeah, do you ever cross the bay, like, go from O'Connell to, like, Sturgeon Bay in your boat? And I was like, yeah, I do it quite a bit. She's like, well, me and my husband were thinking about trying to go across on our pontoon boat. And she's like, well, would that be okay? I was like, she asked me how long it took me. And I was like, well, if it's, like, glass calm, I can get across in, like, 10 to 15 minutes. But that's going 60 miles an hour. And I've had times where I've gotten over there in 15 minutes, and it took me 2.5 hours to get back. And she's like, well, it's a really big pontoon boat. It's, like, 60 miles long. I was like, and she's like, it has a really big motor. And I was like, well, how many horsepower motor does it have? She's like, well, I don't know. And I was like, I wouldn't recommend it to go across in a 16-foot pontoon boat.
Oh, my God. I was reading, because I was looking on Amazon.com and stuff like that, and on the reviews for Ike's Fishing on the Edge book, and then some comment was, like, some dickhead book reviewer was like, oh, a maverick fisherman, what's going to be next? A wild pool player or something like that? I'm just like, what are you even doing on this? Like, why are you even reviewing this book if you don't really know at all?
Yeah.
Did you see they updated the bass strategies? So it's new KVD bass strategies?
I think I did see that. I didn't read it yet, but
the first one was completely ridiculous. Like, most of the stuff still goes over my head completely, and I read that probably 4 or 5 years ago.
Now that's the first
one. The first one they wrote in the early 90s.
Okay, because
the second one, Secret of the Champion, was like way better, and like not way better, but it was just a little bit more dumbed down. Where,
yeah,
because I don't know if he was different in the 90s, but like there's no way he switches out his hooks every single time he catches a fish. Or he was just talking about so many tactics. It's like there is no way he does all
this. The funniest one I remember, I'll never forget this one, is talking about, I don't know the exact conditions that he wanted to use this strategy in, but it takes an anchor. He actually writes a whole chapter on, or at least a paragraph on how he creates a mud line by taking an anchor, tying it off to his boat, you know, with a rope, and dragging it across the bottom to create this artificial mud line. And then he fishes the mud line because the bass, I have seen where the bass like being on the edge of a mud line so they can catch bait, but I mean, to create one with your anchor and then just hope that bass come and find it,
impossible. Well, he probably has enough mud lines from all the people following him all the time.
Yeah, nowadays.
We joke all the time about KVD. I remember the one where he was like, you know, if you're, I think it was either from Bass Strategies or Secrets of the Champion, he goes, if you're ever faced with 3 to 4 foot waves, you can always run a spook and just skip them over the top of, like, he's talking about casting on the top of the crest and ripping it through this crest. And I'm like, when are you ever going to use that technique?
Yeah. I also like, his old videos, there was one where the pitching and flipping one, where he talks about how important the hook set is, and he says something like, you really want to just set the hook into him really hard, get that fish completely disoriented, and basically, like, stun the fish by your hook set, which is, I mean, I don't know if that actually affects him or not, but...
Well, I've seen him die from when you set the hook and they've hit the side of the boat before. When you guys were fishing, you guys had a couple of interesting encounters.
Yeah, that's great. Me and Ted are fishing I guess Lake Winneconne, I think it was, you know, like on the Winnebago system, and it was early spring, like right around Easter time. It was nice and warm that year, and we were fishing this back bay where the fish come in to spawn, and this guy, and well, and all of a sudden we're fishing these docks, and all of a sudden there's some birds up above our head, black, red-winged blackbirds, and we're flipping, and all of a sudden we hear, boom, a gunshot goes off right next to us. We look over, and this guy had just jumped out of his boat. He was hiding in his boathouse. He jumped out of his boathouse and shot a red-winged blackbird out of a tree with a, it wasn't even a pellet gun, it was like a 22. Shot a blackbird out of the tree with a 22 right above us and falls into the water dead. And jumps back to his boathouse. Like, wait for more. And then we look around, and there's like two other blackbirds floating in the water. So then, like, 5 minutes later, Ted flips this one back, and he sets the hook on, like, a little 13-incher and just reefs on it. And that thing flies back at the boat at about 100 miles an hour. And it actually, the hook popped out, fell out before it got to the boat. So the fish is free flying towards us without a hook in its mouth from the hook set, and it hits the side of the boat and dies instantly, floating dead on the surface of the water without a hook in it at all. And this fish is dead. So, and then I grab it and try to revive it, and it's just completely just dead. Oh. And we look around, we keep fishing, and there's like three blackbirds and a dead 13-inch here just floating, just a big graveyard of stuff.
Oh my god. I remember when we, you remember when we had that like just ridiculous bite on I don't remember which, like, I think it was Michikani, when you were just skipping frogs up in the trees, and you like had like a foul cast, and you kind of casted it way over the top of the branch, and as soon as it hits the water, boom, you set the hook, and it's just 2.5-pounder shoots way up into the trees.
Yeah, because the line had looped over the top of a branch, so when I set the hook, the bass shot up over the tree. It was just, it was awesome.
How about the time when you casted like a long, we were on Upper Scott and for all of our smallmouth, and you casted like that KVD 1.5, and it like snapped as soon as you set the hook, or as soon as you like casted, and you know, huge backlash, and the bait went flying 100-200 yards, and as we're putting up to it, like, it was sitting in the water for like 45 seconds, and we finally get up near it, and this 4-pound smallmouth just boom, it's right on it. It missed. So then we go up near it closer and drills it again and takes it completely under the water.
The bait broke off on the cast, and it's one of those ones where it just something happens in the reel or something, and the line breaks, and all of a sudden you don't even have a clue where the bait is, and it's like the hang time is like 5 seconds, and all of a sudden you hear a little splash. So we're gonna go get my KVD 1.5, and the bass comes up and takes it after like 45 seconds to a minute of just sitting there pulling downstream. And it jumped up in the air a couple times because it actually hooked itself, and then it shakes the bait loose.
You gotta wait. You gotta wait with the crankbait for sure. They'll just hook themselves.
Yeah. That's when you kind of pop out and just drift with the current.
Oh my god. Yeah, all that stuff just happens so often, and well, people don't really realize too. Just not to segue into subjects at all, but how much like dealing with the other species of fish that we have to deal with constantly, like down south. I don't mean to continue this podcast to be like hating on anything or to put the differences between southern and northern anglers, but we get with sometimes with like all the, because the bass aren't the apex predators up here. For those people who don't know, I mean, generally you got the esox, like the pike and the muskies are the apex. And I mean, there's so many times where you think you got like a 6-pounder on and it comes in and it's just this stupid northern, or you go and you see a giant frog blow up and you set the hook and there's nothing there. And it's just something that you really don't got to deal with down south.
Yeah, it's definitely annoying, that's for sure.
When we were in the, go ahead.
There's a few lakes that we fish, like the Michikani, where there's just not a whole lot of pike, which is really, you know, different, because most of the lakes here just have an abundance of, like, small 20-inchers. But Like, there's the one lake we fish tournaments on doesn't have a whole lot. So generally, like, you can go a whole day without catching it. But when you do catch one, it's, you know, probably it's usually like 30 inches or more.
Yeah.
So you always think you have a 6-pounder on, especially if you're like flipping or something, and they're heartbreaking.
I mean, I suppose they do have to deal with sheephead and stuff, Dad. So I guess I shouldn't say that because those things are so annoying.
Yeah, and they're actually they can almost be worse, but at least they don't bite off your
draw. But they tangle the hell out of your jig, and it's pretty much useless anyways. But I don't think there's too many people catching drums on frogs.
Yeah, those are some super aggressive drums.
I don't know if I told you this, but when me and Colbeck were down in Gunnersville one year, I think it was last year, and it was just after that boat accident, or just the day before that boat accident happened, like, we were fishing the bluff wall, and all of a sudden, this police boat just screams up by us, and we're right by that giant bridge, and he goes... He just, like, sits there and starts watching us fish, and we're just, like, the way people act on how different than we are up here, like, it's just so odd.
Yeah.
And this guy was like, do you guys see any bodies floating around here? I'm just like, what? And Colbeck, we laughed because we thought, he goes, no, nope, some guy dumped off the bridge, it's not running from the police. So then we're like, no, sorry. Goes, well, this is generally where all the bodies go to because of the giant arm ring or whatever, but the thing. And then as they're putting away, this guy goes, he's a black guy, so it won't be too hard to see him. Like, what? Why was that pertinent to me at all? I was just dying laughing. And I was just like, well, Colbeck, we're really a different world down here. And then an hour, 2 hours later, these two boats collided 100, like 70 miles an hour going full speed, head on. I don't know how that even happens. And then all the people got ejected out of the boat, and...
Yeah, that's not... That was fun.
I don't even know how that happens, and then... I don't know, I just... I could never even consider, you know... Yeah, we've hit shit before, and... Definitely on... You go past some rapids and stuff like that, and you look down, and it's just scary, but... Yeah. I never actually hit, like... There's no way I've even come close to hitting anybody.
No, especially not while they were running as well.
Except in the Milwaukee Lakes by us when the pontoon boat almost ran you over.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, that was at least at, you know, idle speed somewhat.
Oh my god, those lakes, I'm not too pumped to fish those. I definitely have adapted a better sense of not worrying about boat traffic or anything like that because...
Oh yeah.
I mean, you've fished them before, and like, for those people who don't, like, down south and generally any place that is like a solid bass fishery, you don't really gotta worry about too many pleasure boaters as far as like the concentration of them. I'm sure there's some, but where I live, it is one of the most ridiculous sights you'll ever see. Like, there's just people moored out in the middle of the lake, and they're all natural lakes, so it's not like a huge body of water, and there's seriously like 200 to 500 people on like these 400 to 600 acre lakes just everywhere.
Oh yeah. I'm sure there are pontoon boaters and stuff out on, like, stuff, but it's so big that you don't even notice them. Like, imagine, you know, 500,000 pontoon boaters and jet skiers in one creek on Gunnersville.
Yeah, it's...
And then another 100 or 100 bass boats as well. Like, that's what it's like on the small lakes by us that are, you know, 400 or 500 acres.
There's no courtesy whatsoever with them either.
Oh, no.
Like, I've actually had two Carolina rigs ripped off last year just by people skiing, and it's like, are you guys kidding me? Like, you guys are right. Like, remember when we were fishing by the by the no wake buoy, and we were within casting, within casting distance of the no wake buoy, and like multiple times during the day there was a guy that just comes right between us, between the no wakes, Or the time, I think that was with you, I think we were on Knockabee or whatever, and we were skipping docks, and there was like, after we skipped the dock, a kayaker came between us and the dock.
The kayakers, man, they can be awful. I don't understand what their deal is, but they're so obsessed. I think it's mostly around rivers, but they're so obsessed with like the best line, almost like racing NASCAR, that they will go, they don't care who is out there or where you're fishing. You go right under your line. You can be flipping. I've been flipping a bank on the Peshtigo River, And then it was, you know, 10 feet away flipping, like, every, you know, every 10 seconds another flip. This kiter comes in between me and the bank because that's, like, the preferred line for his, he was training for some race that was there or something.
Well, oh my god. You have to bring it back full circle into the RNT tournaments. Do you remember when the pontoon boat was just... Wait, I don't even know if it was a pontoon boat or whatever, but it was just circling around us and the other boat, and...
Yeah, I think it was a water skier.
Yeah, a water skier. There's dumps on the lake, obviously, right by where all we fish.
Yeah.
then Gilligan says, yep, the guy went by and I put a 1 ounce spinnerbait right off the side of the boat. My thought was, well, how do you even aim that well with a spinning rod and a 1 ounce spinnerbait?
Yeah. How does it not break your line on the back cast?
Oh my god. Yeah, I'm pretty ready to start flipping and start having some fun. I can't wait to get out in the water.
Yeah, I can't wait to punch some bass. Oh, that reminds me, I gotta say, give a big congrats to Cody's former UWSP teammate, Cody Salzman. Salisbury Salzman, who took fourth out of, I think, 170 boats on Gunnersville.
That's awesome.
Last weekend, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah. Nah, he's not gonna care. I'll talk about it. He's not gonna mind. Because he had been texting me, because we've had some, like, down there or whatever, but we've obviously been in good times, like, early spring or whatever, and he's been texting me stuff, and, you know, I don't know that much about the lake, but he was just every day, he's like, man, it's so tough out here, this is going to be the worst, there's not going to be a lot of bait, you know, it's going to be such a tough tournament, everybody's bitching, and I'm like, Cody, it's not going to be, I'm sure it's going to be tough, but, so he ended up putting something together, which is just awesome. I guess he was going, well, I don't really want to drop the ball, but not that anybody really is going to listen to this podcast. And he's using skinny dippers, I guess, shallow, and he was punching too. So,
yeah.
But I kind of want to get on that too, about how people just assume if you catch 25 pounds or whatever, that it was just, oh, it was just simple. It's a great lake, but it's still not easy to find them. Like, it's a giant body of water, and they could seriously be anywhere, especially on Gunnersville where everything looks good.
Right. We can joke all the time about this, how a lot of the Wisconsin small lakes that are small, I mean, you can just kind of troll them around the whole lake, you know, around the shorelines, or just follow the weed lines, and you can catch, you know, you can cover the whole lake in a day, and you can figure something out. But, like, I mean, down in Kentucky Lake, it's so big, like, if you don't do the map study and the, you know, if you're not looking at your side imager and all that stuff, you can't just, you know, we call it RNTing on the lake. That's the circuit that we fish. That's what everybody does. I mean, you can't just do that and expect to catch anything on those bodies of water because there's so much unproductive water. There's lakes and there's tons of fish, but they're so, you know, they're schooled up and concentrated, and there's tons of this dead area.
Oh, it's insane. I mean, I bet you there's 99% of the lake is dead. I wouldn't even be. That's not even a gross exaggeration. Like, you can go miles without getting a bite, and then you can get, but obviously they're more schooled up, and you can get 60 to 70 fish, but it's still not easy to find them.
Right.
And you can't just throw a sinker, you can't just be like, well, I'm just going to go out there and wing it today. Well, I mean, you can't do that, but chances are you're not going to catch it. And I guess unless you have, like, extreme experience on lakes like that, it's not like up here where, like, I could seriously show up to any tournament up here and have a legitimate chance to win.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's not likely, but what I do is just pick a frog up or anything where there's any bit of grass or any cover, and I start banging out a frog, and, you know, at least I have confidence in it and fishing frogs, but you can't just go throw a frog around on Gunnersville.
Right.
I mean, even the grass that looks great, it still is good. I mean, sometimes it's not good.
Right, and there's, like, hundreds of miles of it.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, so how do you like the Elite Series since so far?
I've been trying to... I haven't gotten to watch the Table Rock tournament much, but I saw McClellan won on a jerkbait, looked like.
Yeah.
And but Mark Davis, man, he is on fire.
That's awesome.
He's leading the points, and I haven't really heard much of him the last few years, but he was really good in the mid-90s, and now he looks like he's back.
Well, I feel like they're going back to, like, the old school lakes like they were in the 90s, like Table Rock and Gunnersville and
yeah, Yeah, they kind of got away from the. They kind of this from the northern lakes and the. They haven't been to California in a few years, but.
Well, I feel like there's just specialists that fish on the TVA lakes. That's why there was like that run where KVD won. I mean, not that KVD's not a great angler, but he's obviously way better on the TVA lakes than most people. And so like, you know, he won those few angler of the years, but like they had a Kentucky Lake every year and a Pickwick every year, and it was just
like then they had Kentucky Lake, Gunnersville. I think they might have done the Wilson or something. I mean, it's not really. Yeah, they didn't really do the Missouri like Highland Reservoir lakes.
The grindy. I don't know. I've never even fished Table Rock or any of those, but.
They're great, man.
That's what it sounds like. Oh, man.
I don't know. McClellan is just such a stud with the jerk bait.
Yep. I can't wait till the Delaware River turn, and Ike's going to dominate that one.
Yeah, Ike is a freak on tidal waters. It doesn't seem to matter where it is. He does good on all the East Coast tidal waters, and then he does good in the Louisiana Delta because it's tidal water, and he does good in the California Delta because it's tidal water.
Yeah.
He just understands it somehow.
Well, do you remember when he at the Classic and he weighed in and he did shitty the last 2 days and he goes, well, wait till we go to Delaware River. I'm going to win that mother. I'm just like, oh.
Yeah.
Obviously, he knows it too. I love how we joke. I always like joking about the KVD and how he just the so we read that ice fishing article on Bassmaster.com and it was legitimately sounded like either you or I wrote an article pretending to be KVD. That's how ridiculous it sounded.
Yeah.
He was talking about, I don't remember what it was exactly, but he was talking about ice fishing stuff for bass, and do you remember completely what he was saying?
Yeah, I think he was completely I was talking about doing 100 holes, which most people do, but instead of, you know, setting tip-ups or jigging or something, like, he's like a half ounce. Red eye shad, and he's just talking about bouncing from hole to hole and just whipping it as fast as you can and fish faster than you would in the middle.
Because he does, you've seen him in his drop shot, he's legitimately just cranking in the drop shot. It's like...
Yeah, my favorite is the caffeine shot. And like the funny thing is, after I seen that, I started doing that for smallmouth on a river by my house, and it works awesome. Like, you can't wind it fast enough. If that thing never touched the water and just like, if you wind fast enough, that would be a quarter inch off the water. Like, they would still hit.
Oh, my God, yeah. We've seen it happen, and it's that always stupid thing that plays in the back of your head, like, oh, I'm going way too fast. And it's like, no, you're not. Like, you have no idea. Those fish can swim, probably burst up to, like, 25 miles an hour.
I don't know the speed, but I know you pretty much, if the fish wants your bait, you pretty much, like, can't wind it fast enough to get it away from them.
I mean, Jesus. You, Christ, talking for 45 minutes already. My favorite, the one story that you tell that I just can't, I don't know if it's going to be, like, easy to say, like, without a visual, but that story you told me about when you were salmon fishing that one time. Like,
oh, yeah, okay. This was when I was maybe, like, 12 or 13 years old, and one of my friends was fishing with me, and I was kind of waiting out in the water, and he was standing on shore, and there were some rocks, and most people listening to this probably never salmon fished, but a lot of the salmon fishing in Wisconsin is basically like salmon snagging, more or less. the typical like setup is actually more almost like a drop shot rig, where you put a bell sinker on the tag end, and you have a treble hook like about a foot above with a spawn sack, which is like a, you know, egg salmon. So anyway, this kid I was with, he was casting one rod that had like a jerk bait or something on it, and he just had his spawn sack rod down on the rock, like down on the rack, but it was propped up at like a 45 degree angle over this rock, and the line was wound up almost to the tip of the rod. So the spawn, and it's leaning over the water in like a foot of water. So the spawn sack was probably like 2 to 3 feet above the water surface, like just dangling off the end of its rod. And I look back and I'm talking to him. And this all of a sudden the salmon, which, I mean, it was probably, you know, like a 15, an average size for the rivers around here, like 15 pounds. The salmon leaps out of the water about 3 feet in the air. And the salmon jumps up into the air. And I don't know if it's coincidence or if it tried to do this, but the bait goes right into his mouth. The salmon's mouth closed right on the bait, and then it went, dove back in the water, and it swam away and took the pole and everything with it. And it was the craziest thing I ever saw. I still can't even believe that it actually happened. Like, there's no way that fish knew that spawn. They don't even bite when they're, I mean, you can't even get them to bite when you're fishing normally because they're spawning and they're not interested in eating at all. And, you know, 90% of the time you're just fishing to try to hook them in the mouth. They almost never bite. And this fish jumped up 3 feet in the air and grabbed this spawn sack that was dangling off the rod that was just sitting on the bank. And jumps back and takes the whole rod. So anyway, he's casting, and 10 minutes later, so he hooks his rod, or hooks the line or something, and reels his rod back in. The fish had, I don't know if it broke off or just...
Oh my God.
The fish wasn't on there anymore, but it was just the craziest thing I ever saw.
You and I have a viral video on YouTube if anybody's ever seen it. I don't know if you guys have, but it just type in smallmouth bass fishing in YouTube, and you'll see... one of my old YouTube account, and it's from, Christ, 2008, 2009.
Yeah.
When I first started fishing with you, and Casey catches one, and, I don't know, it's hard to explain. You gotta watch it. It's hilarious that we got 35 or 37,000 views now. We can't really capitalize on that, though. Wish that we could somehow upload it to our YouTube site.
Yeah, I think if you type in smallmouth bass fishing... It's usually like in the first five videos, and the username I think is what BassinBlog25 or
yep,
something.
Yep. And because BassinBlog 1 through 24 was all taken.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and basically we were just bed fishing for this smallmouth, and it's if you got the time, just watch the whole thing. But if you're getting bored with it, I think you can fast forward to like the 3 minute mark or something where I actually set the hook, and then the fight is the funny part.
Yeah. Oh my God, I can't wait to go up and fish.
Yeah.
Oof. So anything else you want to talk about? You want to plug some of your sponsors?
No, not really any sponsors to plug right now.
Yep. So when's the old one out for the first time?
I don't know. It should be. I think I'm gonna get her out of storage this weekend and have it tuned up, and then probably take her out.
Well, if you want to meet, I'm going on the Wolf next weekend. So
going to the Wolf next weekend. Hey?
Yeah, I might just get a hotel and just in one of the shitty cozy breast motels.
Yeah.
Get maybe some chicken titty sandwiches and white.
See somebody jump the curb in a. Van and have the hood pop onto the windshield.
Wait, what?
You don't remember that? Okay, we're sitting there doing our tackle at the Cozy Rest in Montello, Wisconsin on Buffalo Lake, and this van, it was like a Plymouth Voyager or something. It had like the hood already was unlatched, like, you know, you pull the latch or whatever to pop it. Well, most of it already been popped and it wasn't closed down all the way. Anyway, he tried to pull into this hotel going like way too fast, and he jumps the curb, or he hits the curb, and his hood pops up and flips over his windshield.
Like in Tommy Boy.
Yeah, exactly. He pulls into the hotel. I can't believe, or motel. I can't believe you don't remember that.
No, I remember when we were at Dardanelle, and the homeless people pull up with their van / trailer / dog pound. And the guy opens his door, and just five PBR cans just fall out, like right from a movie.
Yeah, because he was driving like an old like 1970s style RV.
And the whole thing was just bottomed out with garbage.
Yeah, rusted out, and like, I mean, I wouldn't even trust that to go down the street. And he was driving it. He was from Iowa over to Arkansas in the mountains. And his wife was driving an old beater Explorer. They took two different vehicles. And yeah, he opens the door and just beer cans fall everywhere. And the ranger, the park ranger or whatever, came and yelled at him for apparently that, or all, there in Arkansas is like a dry county, and they didn't like that there was just beer cans scattered all over the picnic tables.
Yeah, there's some good, oh man, I could sit here and tell hours and hours of stories about traveling and tiny little spots and sleeping in my van and...
Yeah.
Do you see Marizo travels with a giant conversion van instead of like a truck?
Yeah, that's, I don't know. I mean, it would be nice, but I think I would still just prefer hotel rooms. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know, man. If you got anything else to talk about, we're already at an hour.
Yeah, I think we'll just save it for next time.
Yeah, for sure. We should start because we fished a circuit together, and we should just... I should just bring all my recording equipment up by you.
Yep.
And we just do a recap every tournament, even though it's like 20 minutes, which it probably won't be.
Right.
I think I'm going to get the, I think I'm just going to go ahead and buy the $10 a month thing where you, you get like 5 gig of storage and 50 gig of monthly bandwidth. So you don't really have to limit yourself on podcasts, because I'm like basically want to do one every night now.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. Hopefully get enough big enough following to, it seems like it's catching on pretty quick, and it's really cool.
Yeah, for sure. All right, man, well, maybe I'll see you Friday then, if you want to, right. If you want to, just text you when I'm leaving, so.
Sounds good.
All right, man, peace out.
See ya.
All right, that was Casey and myself. I don't know if it was distracting at all, but I apologize, and I'll apologize in the future if ever he's on again, but I was giggling like a complete schoolgirl the entire time. So that's the podcast. If you guys want to check out Amazon.com. Oh, alarm going off. Let's check that out. sorry about that. If you guys want to check out Amazon.com, go to the podcast page on www.bassquadcorp.com and click on the link. And if you order anything off of there, it'll take 4-8% of whatever you order and kickstart our podcast. So also there's a donate button on the podcast page on Podomatic. If you guys would be so kind, that'd be awesome. I'd really appreciate it. If not, don't. I don't really care. As long as you guys listen, I appreciate all the love. So yeah, peace out. I'll talk to you guys next time.